ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Bhagavata Dharma, Namtayena Nirupita, Priya Paramahamsthanam, Tadena Vishuddha Priya, Kimba, or Bhagavata Dharma, devotional activities of the living being, Na, 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 Dayena, Almost, Nirupita, Directed, Priya, Dear, Paramahamsthanam, of the perfect beings, Eva, that also. He certainly, Achyuta, the infallible, Priya, attractive. Translation. This may be because I did not specifically point out the devotional service of the Lord, which is dear both to perfected beings and to the infallible Lord. Purport. The dissatisfaction which was being felt by Srila Vyasadeva is expressed herein in its own words. This was felt in the normal condition of the living being in the devotional service of the Lord. Unless one is fixed in the normal condition of service, neither the Lord nor the living being can become fully satisfied. This defect is felt by him when Narad Muni, his spiritual master, reached him. It is described as follows. So the Dharma Shastras state that to understand one's duties, there's four things that must be in place. That what you are doing must be according to the Veda. It must be according to the Shruti, that the Smriti Shastras based on the Veda. It must be in line with the traditions and customs of the great saintly personalities, and there must be self-satisfaction. So if these four aren't in place, then you know there's something wrong with your duty. This is the basic principle, that there's dissatisfaction. So we find that Vyasadeva is dissatisfied, he's contemplating, and he's making the point, I'm doing everything according to the Shastras. That is all done. I'm following everything that the great personalities have done. I'm fully equipped with all this. You know, I am the personification of it, but I'm not satisfied. So that means his duty is not complete, he's not rightly situated. There's something wrong in his duty. Otherwise, he'd be satisfied. Because by performance of one's duty, the Lord is satisfied. When the Lord's satisfied, we're satisfied. So this is where the difficulty then arises, is his satisfaction is not coming because the Lord's not satisfied. So that is the point. So it's not enough to be following the scriptures and the tradition. The Lord has to be satisfied. And when he's satisfied, then we're satisfied. So, here is prescribed duties. The prescribed duties are then for our purification. By performing prescribed duties, one is elevated. The dirt within the heart is removed. One is elevated to a higher platform. But being elevated to a higher platform isn't enough. unless it's elevated to transcendence, one's missed the point. Otherwise, the karmis, the jnanis, yogis, very elevated. Maharaj Yayati, the performances he performed are so great. I mean, he himself could go to Brahmaloka, could travel any heavenly planet he could go to. There was no heavenly planet he couldn't go to. His austerities, his sacrifice were so great. But it's still not enough. The yogis, they seem the Paramatma. The impersonalists, they're absorbed in Brahman. Very elevated people. You can't get higher than these people in culture and realization and understanding of the scriptures. You don't have a higher position. But the difficulty comes is all of them are dissatisfied. So actually, then the point is that satisfaction, self-satisfaction, is dependent upon the Lord being satisfied. That's the inherent point made in the Sri Shastras and the Veda. But the Veda and the Smritis, then, except for the transcendental knowledge, the Paramatma, then they are all technically classified as mundane knowledge. Because they tell about how the creation works, how it functions, how to be absorbed in it in a way that is elevating. That is the point. Piety means you are absorbed in material energy, but in such a way that you're not degraded, you're elevated. So this is the Shruti and Smriti. But only the transcendental literature, like Srimad Bhagavatam, that points out what is actually pleasing to the Lord. What is pleasing to the Lord. So that is actually the key. So when the Dharma Shastra says that you have to follow Shruti, follow Smriti, and follow the traditions of the sages and of our parampara, our own culture, then that is the easy part. But to get self-satisfaction, that's the difficult part. Because until that's there, it's not complete. And that can only be obtained when the Lord is satisfied. So then, that becomes easy through devotion. Therefore, in the Mahabharata, we have 100,000 verses. In these 100,000 verses, and you have 700 of the Gita. And within that, you have a few that actually make this point. That they say that you are to perform your duty, but you're to perform it to please the Lord. That's actually the point. So now, 100,000 verses, and 10, 20 of them actually directly say this. That you should perform your duties in connection with the Lord for His satisfaction. That Him being satisfied, you'll be satisfied. Then Dharma is complete. So this becomes Narada Muni's point. This is his point of dissatisfaction. He's written all the Vedic literature. They indirectly point at it. Mano is saying, without bhakti, you're not going to be satisfied. If you're not satisfied, you're actually not fully religious. But it's not direct. It's not obvious. Right? In Mano, because this is a discussion here of dharma, of occupational duty. So in the Dharma Shastra, Mano, there's also 20, 30 verses that may directly point that devotional service is there, and then others that are more hidden, and then others more hidden than that. Most people will read, they won't even notice the ones. It opens saying, we have come to you because you know how to perform dharma in connection with the Lord, so we can realize the Lord. That's the second verse. Right? You won't hear that again in the whole rest of the next thousands of verses. So, Narada Muni makes the point, it's too indirect. The common people won't notice that. You give them 10 points why it's good and 1 point why it's bad. They go, well, if you weigh it up, then, you know, it's 10 to 1, so I'll take the, you know, the good. They won't take it. Well, actually, there's no comparison between the two platforms of good. the mundane good and the spiritual. They don't make that, you know, differentiate. If I have a very peaceful emotional experience, it's called spiritual these days. And people will say, if I just, you know, I go out into the forest and I forget all my worries in the city and it's beautiful and somehow or other the mood's right, and then it's spiritual. You know, anything can be spiritual. You know, even a love story, anything. As long as it creates deep emotion that makes you forget all your worries, then it's called spiritual. Like that. Some, you know, we'll call it religious, and if you're more new age, you call it spiritual. But in any case, that's the limit. That's as good as it gets. But the point is unless you go beyond this to transcendence, it's not enough. Therefore, Krishna says, doing your duty in knowledge, that will purify. You do your duty, you'll become purified real slowly, but you'll become purified. It's guaranteed, it's progressive. Millions of lifetimes is a karma, you'll step up. If you do your duty, naishkarmya, with knowledge, then one lifetime you can purify yourself and get to the Brahman platform. But that's not enough. It has to be done with devotion to Krishna. Then you get the bhakti. Then you get the real thing. Because otherwise, all the scriptures are hinting at naishkarmya. They don't want to push the point too much, but people will get hated. The only reason I'm doing it is because of the result. If you say, hey, do your duty without the result, then it's why? Because if you say, well, you'll be liberated, okay, that's good for Brahmins. The Karmis aren't interested in being liberated. They want to enjoy here. If you say, hey, bhakti, it's bhakti to who? Who am I to? I mean, there's something more. So it becomes very difficult, touchy subject. So it's hinted at. But it's not direct. And in Gita, Mahabharata conclusion that is direct of the naishkarmya. And the bhakti is stressed, but it's not enough in comparison. So then you can understand it's not been just directly spoken. There hasn't been a literature written that just directly says, this is God, this is us, this is our relationship with Him, this is our service, this is His satisfaction, therefore that's our satisfaction. So that is what is, that is the point. Now, in doing this, it's also important, is that to look at it, his method, because this is, okay, this is nice, but if we look at it, what is his situation, right? Because it's a very popular theme. That, you know, we're here in the, you know, 21st century and things are different than they were before and it's very special and unique and we have to do things completely different. You know, I thought it said stand in your head, put your feet in the air. You need to do something that's different because it's 21st century, right? But Vyasadeva wrote the Mahabharata because it was Kali Yuga. And in Kali Yuga, people were degraded. Right? So, this degradation for the, you know, just the conditioned soul on their own is pretty subjective. It's not an objective factor. Scripture is objective, but the individual will be subjective. Like you'll always see, you'll say, oh, the youngsters today are becoming so degraded, but we consider that our generation is okay, and the previous generation is a bit, you know, fanatic. But you go to the previous generation, we're the younger generation that's degraded. And then the next generation is even more degraded. So the point is Kali Yuga means degradation. And degradation means they're turning away from the Lord. They're turning away from the scriptures. So his solution then was to give Mahabharata. Because people didn't have the patience to study the Veda. Study the Vedic scriptures. Sound familiar? Right? They were performing their duties, but they were having a tendency to give up their duties. Sound familiar? Right? So the point is there is no difference. So then he wrote Mahabharata as a solution. He didn't turn to who were the popular, you know, people with spousing popular philosophies at that time, and there were plenty of them. You had people that had modernistic ideas in those days. It's been, modern ideas have always been there. It's always a theme. It's not a new thing of today. They're always there. So then, he didn't turn to that. He turned to a Vedic solution. Okay, if you can't study the whole Veda, study the essence of the Veda in Mahabharata. But in doing it, trying to make the people nice, good, moral, you know, upstanding, good members of the community, prosperous, economic, good family units, you know, good social interaction, good family interaction, emotionally stable, satisfied, all this is what Mahabharata is all about, he missed the point. Therefore, we can see is that if he missed the point taking this angle for the specific purpose of, you know, social, economic development, then how can we find any other means if we take any other path? He's taken a Vedic path and failed. So how will a non-Vedic path ever get anywhere? Not possible. So he's not saying that the first three parts are in place. He's following the culture, others are following the culture, all these other people, Jaimini and all, they're all doing nice. Right? He's given all the Vedas to all these people. A lot of them are atheists, impersonalists. They're all doing great. They're following the Shruti, they're following the Smriti, they're following the traditions, and no one's satisfied. So that is Bhagavatam. So what you have to see is that Bhagavatam is the solution because it's eternal. It is topical. It addresses what is happening today, what is happening this moment. So the same principles that are here, these aren't stories. Just, oh, nice story, oh, great story. And then, but for myself, I go to some other source. No, Bhagavatam will answer all questions. That's the, right? Here's one of the chapters, right? Bhagavatam is the answer. So, in one of the chapters, making that point, Bhagavatam will give. Then everything else seen in that light, then will work. Whatever it is. Material, spiritual, economic, religious, sensual, anything will work if it's seen in light of Bhagavatam. Because then by following the Bhagavatam, then you actually please the Lord. So that's the actual point. So then we see is that Prabhupada gave us the essence, the technicalities of the Vedic culture, of the Vedic scriptures, are not to cannot be imbibed immediately, right? I mean, you want to learn the body of knowledge, the technicality. It takes many years, right? But to learn the essence, that can be learned in a moment. So probably gave the essence. But our happiness is dependent upon Krishna's happiness. So if you strive for Krishna's happiness, we will be happy. How do we get Krishna's happiness? That is given to us by the previous acharyas. So their customs and traditions are what we follow. What do they follow? What's based on Shruti and Smriti? Then we see all four gone. So we don't start with our satisfaction. We start with our satisfaction, but we immediately know that our satisfaction comes from satisfying the Lord. We start from our satisfaction and leave the Lord out of it, then we'll be even in a worse mess than Vyasadeva. Because at least he started from the scriptures and found he wasn't satisfied. So we start with myself, what will make me happy? And then try to do that and leave out the scriptures and the acharyas. There's no chance. You don't have even mundane happiness. See, mundane happiness is one thing, satisfaction is another thing. That's the whole point. Satisfaction means whether it's good or bad, you're satisfied. Because there is no historical account, either spiritual or material, of anyone being materially happy. Right? It doesn't, we hear about it, but that's it. It's only heard of. Shruti Sukha. It means we've heard of it. No one's had it. Right? The moment. When the moment of attaining your desire comes, When that point passes the time of present, you're happy. But when it goes into past, it's gone. Because happiness is fulfilling your desire. But once it's fulfilled, you can't claim you're happy. You can say, I'm satisfied, but you can't say you're happy. So satisfaction is another thing. So we can only actually be satisfied when we perform our duties in connection with Krishna. Then we can be satisfied. Any questions or comments? Anything else? Yes. The fourth one is self-satisfaction. You have Shruti is one, Smriti is another, because everything is based on Veda. So everything that stands on its own. Then Smriti, that's based on, Veda stands on its own, Smriti is based on Veda. Because the Veda will make a statement. See, the Vedic Sanskrit is written, it's a unique Sanskrit. And that, it has its theme, but within it, it's written in such a way to bring out the esoterics. So the Vedic Sanskrit basically is hidden meanings and indirect meanings are actually the prominent meanings. The direct meaning is basically taken as secondary. While in classical Sanskrit, which all the Smritis are written on, then you take the direct meaning as what is actually being meant, and within that you can get into esoterics and metaphysics and that. But the Vedic literature are written in such a way that the metaphysics and esoterics are the prominent. That's why they're so bewildering. And that way it gives rise to all the schools of thought. Right? From the Veda you get all the six systems of philosophy. But those philosophers then write Smriti that only talks about their system. So they write in classical sense. So it's very direct. The Vedas, so the Vedas are written that everything's in them. There's nothing that's not in the Vedas. So then, that the Smriti is more specific. Then the sages will then follow those scriptures. So the customs and traditions they follow then are the proper application of the Smriti, Shruti, and Smriti. The self-satisfaction means we choose from their example which ones apply best to us. Right? Because you have so many examples of great personalities. Right? You have Yudhishthira as a king. You have others, Draupadi as a woman. You have the great sages, Vasishtha as a sage. So you have to find which traditions fit our situation. Therefore, self-satisfaction. You have to check which one fits us, which one works nicely. But here, being so sensitive, he's saying even he's doing all that. He's a Brahmin, he's doing all his duties, he's been given specifically within that category, the duty of Vyas. He's done it perfectly. Everything's been written, everything's been designated to somebody, given over to somebody to develop. He's taught it all, he's done his duty perfectly. So now, the point is after finishing his duty, he's feeling dissatisfied. That means it wasn't complete. Right? That's the point. He missed the point. Being so worried that, just like this, a person really wants to be happy in the material world. So a saintly person doesn't like to see others unhappy. So even their materialists, then many times you'll see they will give them advice how to be happy materially. Sanatana Goswami used to advise the villagers in Braj how to conduct their household life or marry off their daughter or son or take care of their cow. These are very important for those people. And so then out of compassion we will say those things. But in doing that you can get carried away. Example being, here's an example, and the most, explicit example is Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj The deer is not important. But there's a soul who thinks they're a deer. And because they have the perception of the happiness and pain of the deer, therefore he tries to please them through, you know, activities that deers like. So this deer lost its mother. So then he tries to provide that fill in that space. But he's seeing the soul as identifying. Therefore, it's still, he's seeing it on the Lukam platform. He's not dropped into some mundane platform. But because of that focus, it's not enough. The Uttam platform of liberation is not enough. You have to be, your mind has to be situated somewhere. And because of that, it must address the need of the soul. The soul is Ananda. Ananda means interaction. So wherever the mind of the liberated soul is, at the point of interaction, that's where they're going to take birth. Right? So because he was worried about this soul, being able to be satisfied as a deer, he could birth as a deer. Or the impersonalists, they go to the Brahman, and then when the mind becomes active, then they think of the material world and activities here, so they take birth here. Right? So that's the point, is the mind, it's self-satisfaction is the mind. Mind means rasa. That means interaction. Intelligence, that's why the jnanis avoid karma. They avoid emotion, sentiment, everything, because they don't have Krishna. So the only way they can operate the liberating platform and stay on it is purely with their intelligence. Because there is no emotion, there's no activity, you know, it's no problem. And the mind takes up speculation as a value, so it becomes satisfied. But the problem is because there's no interaction between one jiva and another. There's no transcendental interaction. There's no, from Brahman to Brahman, there's no interaction. You know, okay, you say Narayan, Narayan, but there's no direct relation. As soon as that comes into as a need, one falls out of the spiritual world. One falls from the Brahman. So, that's the key, is the mind. So that self-satisfaction then is important. But within that, that's why then we look to the devotees. That's why Bhagavatam is important, because in the Mahabharata you have great personalities. Even there's things to learn from the Rakshasas and Yakshas and others about dignity and proper behavior and things. You know, there's a story told that an ungrateful man, even the man-eaters, the Rakshasas, won't eat. A Rakshasa will not eat an ungrateful man. Because they don't want to take on his bad qualities of ungratefulness. Right? Because who you eat, you take on their qualities. Right? That's right. Right? Isn't that the saying, if you can't beat them, eat them? Right? Isn't that the old saying? So then, that's the principle. That's how the karma kanda yajnas work. By eating the horse, they take the karma of the horse. The horse is free from his karma, he's elevated to heaven planets. Then you've got to worry about his karma by your sadhana and everything. So the Rakshasas won't eat an ungrateful man, because they don't want to be ungrateful. And someone who respects and worships their seniors, even the Rakshasa respects that person. So we can learn from them even in the Mahabharata. But the point is it's not connected to Krishna. You see, the Pandavas in their activities and that, even though they're pure devotees, very rare does the Mahabharata bring it to the point of connection to Krishna, where they're saying, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, or they're interacting directly with Krishna. But you see, the same Mahabharata told in the Bhagavatam, which it opens with, in other words, now Vyasadeva has written the Mahabharata, which is about the Pandavas. But in it, people may have gotten the wrong idea, so he sets the record straight. Because the Bhagavatam technically starts with the second chapter, second canto. That's the Bhagavatam that was spoken by Sukadeva through Purihit Maharaj. But what Vyasadeva has written, then there's basically two more cantos, or one and a half more cantos. So the first is the whole history, and sets the record straight of what's the real Mahabharata, what's the real way the Pandavas connected their duties to Krishna, and actually therefore attained perfection. and that perfection means bhakti. Does that make sense? So that's it. Anything else?
Yes. There's a microphone there? Where was that microphone? How does that come about? Oh, how does that?
Mara is making the point that in the Padma Purana, then there's reference to the Bhagavad Purana. It's saying how is the supreme Purana. So how is that when the Padma was written before the Bhagavad? And then if he knows about it, why isn't he satisfied? Because he will write it. So in here is the Veda contains all the branches of Vedic literature. And so within it, it has all its topics, but it's not drawn out as such. It means it's considered one Veda. Here the prophet says Yajurveda. Is one Veda, and it has all the different branches of Vedic knowledge, and that's called Veda. So the Shruti, the Smriti, and the Transcendental, the Paravidya, are all in the Veda. Now, someone who is, if you learn from the teacher, you have the capacity, your teacher knows, he's learned from his teacher, you know all the 14 books of Vedic knowledge, and you know what is Transcendental knowledge, you know Paravidya. So then, you already know it, like you see Maharaj Nanda is quoting Gita whenever there is sometimes difficulties. But this is before the battle of Kurukshetra, because Gita is a body of Vedic knowledge. So the Bhagavat is a body of Vedic knowledge. It's transcendental knowledge. In other words, it is histories culled from the whole Puranic literature that specifically point at transcendence and how to develop your love for God. So that aspect of the Purana is called Bhagavad. So that body of knowledge is always there. So basically, in his writing all the Vedic literatures, then as it is hidden in the Veda, he's made it more obvious than the Veda. But what has happened is he hasn't made it obvious enough. Therefore the dissatisfaction. So the Bhagavad is there as a literature, and he hasn't included all the essential points in all the Vedic literatures. And in his compilation, they're all there. A few points are in this Purana, a few in that, a few here, a few there. And so the full work of the Bhagavad is actually represented in the Vedic literature. It's hidden in the Vedas. And in the Shruti Shastras that he has compiled, it's there. But because he hasn't put it in one place that it's obvious that people go, oh, this is what the Veda means. Therefore he feels dissatisfied. Does that make sense? So it's already there, the body, but it hasn't been compiled. That's why the Vedic literatures are eternal. And then at one point, Vyasadeva, his business is to write it down. So he writes the Gita. He writes these different things. So he could take the Gita from when Krishna spoke to Vivasan. He could take that as Gita also. But he decided to take this explanation. Yamaraj has more full of the Bhagavatam. And it mentions, in the Bhagavatam it opens, it mentions how big the Bhagavatam is. He originally wrote it as 600,000 verses. Then when he gave it to Vaishampayana, he gave it to him as 100,000. And in that, then the essence, you know, and then you can take it from different ways. The Mahabharata, they can be taken as from Shantanu on, from, you start from Shantanu into the Pandavas, that's Mahabharata. Or you can start back from Uprichara Basu, because he was the fourth father, you can start from there. Because Uprichara Basu's daughter is Satyavati. So then that's an important connection. Or you can start at the beginning where Vaishnavani is striving for. In any way. In other words, the body of knowledge is the Bharata, which means the history of India. Then you can take it how far you want. So the Bhagavat means any story that's directly connected between the devotees and the Lord. That's Bhagavat. But then within that, then he can take a particular rendition of Sukadeva and Parikrama Maharaj. So that's what he's chosen. Does that make sense?
I'm satisfied with your opinion. But his field of reality is satisfaction. That is Leela, that's what you have to say.
Of course, it's the satisfaction of being a Leela. But the point is the, as Acharya, because like he's inner line as Acharya, then they will show how to go about doing things that we would find ourselves situation in. In other words, you want to uplift the people of Kali Yuga, then he has a method. We can follow that. In other words, by giving them the scriptures, and from that scriptures, we have to address the transcendence. So we see is then following that, the Prabhupada start with the transcendence, and then as people become purified and situated, then you can start to introduce other aspects of the Vedic culture, because they're technical. But without the essence of pleasing the Lord, the technicality is what's the use? We're not into training smartness. Smartness follow everything perfectly, I missed the point. And even sometimes Vaishnavas get so absorbed they miss the point. They put too much emphasis into the Varnashram and figure by doing that they should be satisfied. But unless the Varnashram satisfies Krishna, how are they going to be satisfied? So that was the point here. So Bhagavatam shows all the culture of Varna and Ashram, but perfectly connected with the Lord. While Mahabharata, in a hidden way, shows it, and only the Gita brings it out, but it doesn't show you practical example. Right? Even when it goes back into Arjuna fighting on the battlefield, it goes back into the same previous mode of just him fighting that leaves Krishna, his rasa with Krishna out of it.
Srila Prabhupada is very intelligent in writing. He is criticizing very heavily on this preaching model of Bhagavad Gita. So how do we reconcile it is being adopted at the moment?
See, Bhagavad Sapta means that they're speaking the Bhagavad in 7 days. Most people are doing, they have a purpose for Bhagavad Sapta is being done for the purpose of just entertaining the audience. And you're not going to entertain the audience with many stories from the first 9 cantos. And generally 11 and 12, you don't hardly bother with at all. And they'll call Moshal or anything. But otherwise, they just drop it. So immediately, most people want to hear 10th canto of 10th canto of Vrindavan Leela, of 10th canto of Vrindavan Leela, the Panchayat, the whole of the Rasa dance. So then they'll spend many, 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 many days on that. But if you look at it, if you take the 12 cantos and divide it up, but that's got to be spoken over 7 days, that means the Panchayat takes up only in a small portion. It's only 5 chapters out of 300. Right? So that's, it's like, you know, what, 1.5% or something. So, but they will take up many days, you know, 5 days with that. So their purpose is just to entertain and make money. Prestige, this and that. So, like that. So Prabhupada was so much, he said he would do a program that, like a seminar on Bhagavatam, but at any rate, do it 6 days. Do it 8 days. Don't do it 7. I think there's some comments that are made like that. But the point is that if we're going to speak on Bhagavatam in 7 days, when you say you're going to speak on Bhagavatam in 7 days, then because it's 7 days, that will get the people to come to it. Why not? But we're living the philosophy of Bhagavatam. But if we're simply doing it as a way to raise money, and therefore just tell stories, and that's all, and we don't actually try to get across the transcendental point, then it's, you know, okay, you know, but you have to see this. You know, it's there. Then it's itself's not direct. then you're getting the money, and then for the money you use the Krishna service, then you get some devotional benefit. So you have to see what is your purpose. That's the whole point here. What is the purpose? And even here the purpose was noble, but because it wasn't connected to Krishna, it didn't quite make it. His last point. It says that we mentioned on self-satisfaction is important. That's basically the Lord's satisfaction. The Lord is always satisfied, so how can there be a duality in the Lord? So the Lord is self-satisfied, but He expands on that satisfaction. So that's the point. When the jivas interact and the internal potency interact with Krishna, that creates, it increases the satisfaction. So since He's expanded the cosmic creation, it's natural that that cosmic creation will interact with Him. So if we do that, then He's satisfied. And if we don't do that, then what's the point of Him expanding the universe? Right? The universe has been expanded to taste that rasa. So that's there. So it's not a matter of His dissatisfaction needs, it's not in the positive. He's always Atman, but it's just that He can go beyond Atman. That's the point. Transcendental is so wonderful that you can be happy, but then you can go beyond it. So that's the point. So the living entity can become eternally happy, and then go beyond that by further pleasing. So that's the basic end here.
Dantarashimakhagatamati, Shimakhagupati, Salavipa, Bhaktivinati, Janitagau, Dantarashimakhagatamati.